Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here with you today, and I want to thank the Taxpayers Association for inviting me to share with you my thoughts and data on the equitable funding of our public school students. I want to start out by kind of laying a philosophical groundwork on it, if I could. You can go ahead, Spencer. Our Constitution calls for the state to establish a free system of public schools, but it's not for the sake of the schools that we establish them. In statute, it makes it very clear that we are establishing schools in order to support parents in their responsibility to provide for their children, to provide a quality education. The state plays a secondary role. It's our job to ensure that parents have tools, resources, options, and information so that they can make the proper decisions about their child's education. Implicit in that, since this is all about the families and the children, it automatically follows that the value of that child's education does not change based on where that child lives or what model of public school that child attends. But today, if you live in zip code 84094, which is in Sandy, you receive an investment from Utah taxpayers of more than $7,500 for your child's education. And if you move to zip code 84095, which is in South Jordan, the investment that you receive from taxpayers drops by 24% to only under $5,900. I think that is a moral travesty. What did that child do wrong by moving from one city to another? That one change in the digit of a zip code from 84094 to 84095 resulted in a drop of funding of more than $1,600 from taxpayers. But besides the moral argument that every child deserves a quality education and every child deserves an equal investment, there are a lot of costs to this disequity. You saw on the last slide that there is, in fact, 115% difference between the lowest funded school district in the state, that is if you're a child who resides in the Jordan School District, and the highest funded school students in the state who live in Park City. Park City received nearly $13,000 in investment from Utah taxpayers for their education compared to under $5,900 for Jordan. And how that results is we are pressing down teacher salaries by not giving the lowest funded students enough buying power in the education market in order to compete for the best teachers. So that you'll see Park City receives 89% more funding than the state average and 115% more than the Jordan School District, but they pay only 29% of a higher salary for their teachers because Park City has the resources to compete, but they don't have to compete 89% more. They only have to pay this much more in order to get the teachers that they need because the gap between the ceiling of our education funding and the floor of our education funding is so vast. So you'll see that we're driving down teacher wages by not giving the lowest funded students in the state enough buying power in the marketplace. Next slide, please. And because that buying power doesn't exist, the highest funded school districts in the state are essentially free to spend their money where it does not as much good. If you look at the data, all of this data comes from the annual financial reports that are submitted by each school district. The school districts that receive the highest per student funding end up spending the highest percentage of that funding on things like administration and buildings that don't change the quality of instruction in the classroom. As you can see, no, go back to that last one if you would. You can see here the administrative spending per student, that Park City is very high. I chose these four school districts to show because they are very close. They border each other, right? Park City and Wasatch and Jordan and Canyons. The difference on a percentage basis between the funding of those four school districts and their neighbors is about the same. But you'll see that the higher funded school districts, even though their numerator is quite a bit higher, end up spending the greatest percentage of their revenue on administration and buildings. Go ahead to the next one. You can see that's especially true on buildings. Jordan School District spends a very low amount on a per-student basis on buildings. Partly that's because their bond failed 2 years ago, and if they pass their one this year, that will go up a little bit more. But when you look at this data, and in order for this presentation, I crunched these numbers for every school district and charter school in the state to find out where those are, and it is almost universally true that as per-student taxpayer investment goes up, And the higher it goes up above the state average, the greater percentage that those school districts are spending on administration and buildings. We ought to be spending our tax dollars where it does the most good for our students, which is in classrooms, on teachers, and on technology. But by creating this massive funding gap between the floor and the ceiling, we are incentivizing school districts to waste money, to bloat their bureaucracies, and to build palaces instead of schools. And we need to change that, and I've got a proposal for how to do that. I call it the equity pupil unit. The state has taken several steps over 20 or 30 years to address this issue. First, by establishing a weighted pupil unit, and then by taking steps to try to equalize the property taxes that flow to on a school district by school district basis. But what we have failed to do is tie ongoing growth to that so that we end up closing that gap over time. A few years will take us a decent step in that direction, but by not solving the crux of the problem, what we find is that over the last several years, the gap between the highest funded and lowest funded students in the state is actually growing. That because Jordan School District is growing so fast, that even though state education aid has increased substantially over the last couple of years, the amount of money that Jordan School Districts receive per student is actually going down because their growth is outpacing their ability to keep up on their own local property tax revenue. So Senate Bill 244 that I sponsored called to tie growth in equity funding to the growth in the weighted pupil unit. It's a fairly simple idea to simply say that we should take a portion of the growth that the state is providing to the education system and dedicate that at a faster and higher rate to the students that are currently the lowest funded students in the state. So that the 3% that we gave to the weighted pupil unit increase this year, if Senate Bill 244 had been in effect, we would have divided that 3% into two pots. 2% of that 3 would have been distributed equally to all students and all school districts in the state, and then 1/3 would have been targeted towards those that are the lowest funded students in the state, so that over time we could begin to close the gap between the floor and the ceiling. Without taking money from any current school district, every school district would continue to receive regular increases in their state education funding, but those students at the bottom of the funding pool would receive those increases at a faster rate. That's the only legitimate way, I believe, the only politically possible way to close that gap. Can we go on to the next slide? And I just want to show you the results of what that would be. These bars show how much each local school district is able to generate by levying one tax increment on their property on a per student basis. And you can see that there's a massive gap. And that at a statewide level, we will probably never reach the level of Park City. There's just too many second homes in that area and too many ski resorts that just are not replicable in the rest of the state. But over time, within about a generation and a half, when it comes to school years, we can, through the equity pupil unit, ensure that 99% of the students in the state receive equitable education funding. And that will in turn increase teacher salaries by giving the students who are currently receiving the lowest funding more buying power in the market for teachers. It will increase the amount of money that's being spent in classrooms instead of on administration, bureaucracy, and buildings by creating the incentives and eliminating the ability of school districts that receive 90% more funding than the state average to take that advantage by growing their bureaucracy. The competition, the buying power that districts like Alpine and Jordan and Davis, they need that buying power in the market. And when they get it, you'll find that we'll be spending our tax dollars better and meeting our moral obligation to provide a quality education with quality funding to every child. Thanks.